And good afternoon, Scott Spears back with you here on this Thursday, January 24th, 2019, 14 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program, and we're going to have a great hour here. Do want to remind you, though, that the Mike Wilson Show, a new public affairs talk show here on WWGH Radio, is on every Monday from 5:10 to 6 p.m. Give Mike's show a listen. It's a great show. Every Monday, 5:10 to 6 p.m., The Mike Wilson Show, right here on WWGH Radio. Now, this hour, we're going to be talking to a very interesting man. His name is Pete Valley, but he is better known as Big Elvis, the biggest Elvis impersonator in size working in the world, to my knowledge. But we'll check with Pete on that. Pete has been the subject of documentaries as well as movies and certainly leads a very interesting life, of which we will talk about this hour. Pete, how are you?
Really good. How are you doing, Scott?
Doing well. Pete, is this an early day for you? You're out in Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's 10 o'clock here, so it's not super early, but it's morning time here.
What's a typical day for you like out in Las Vegas?
Well, when I'm working, I usually get up probably about 8:30 or whatever and get ready for work. And, you know, get into work probably about 1 o'clock. So, you know, I live in Prop, so it's a little bit further out than Las Vegas. I'm probably about, it's 60 miles to the west, more to the California border. So I commute 3 days a week when I do my show at Harrah's.
Now, if people would like to come see you in Las Vegas, what exactly do you do and when do you do it?
I perform in Harrah's, of course, in Las Vegas at the Piano Bar. They're Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The show times are 2 p.m., 3:30, and 5 p.m.
Now, what do you do in your show?
Well, we take a lot of requests, and we do a lot of course, you know, it's primarily Elvis songs because that's my moniker, Big Elvis. We do some Johnny Cash and Rick Nelson and a lot of different, you know, 50s, 60s artists, you know, a couple songs here and there. Also, we do it's not a contest, it's a giveaway. We get people up to actually dance to Viva Las Vegas, and we actually get 3 or 4 girls to come up and dance to that, and then we get a gentleman to come up, and we put him in an Elvis wig and electric air guitar and some Elvis sunglasses, and they kind of dance around to that. It's a lot of fun.
Where did the name Big Elvis come from?
Well, I've always had a weight problem, and you know, years and years and years ago, when I performed all my life, but as I got larger, a friend of mine back in the 90s said to me, he goes, you know, you should go with the name Big Elvis because you're obviously larger than most people, and you know, that might stick, and it did. So, of course, it had to do with my weight, and that's kind of what started the Big Elvis movement.
Want to go back here a little bit, Pete. What was your childhood like?
I was raised in the church a lot like Elvis. As a young boy, my mother was a singer from Nashville, so music was always really, you know, prevalent in my life. It was always very, very much mixed with gospel and country and rock and roll and all that together. So it was really interesting growing up when you have a mother that sings and you know you're in that environment all the time. So it was really good.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to entertain. When I was a young boy, I wanted to be actually in a gospel quartet, like Elvis. I really did. I wanted to sing gospel music, and you know. But then I got influenced by my mother's music, and you know, listening to rock and roll and older rock and roll. Of course, Elvis had a lot to do with that too. So that kind of swayed me over to that kind of thing. And when church, they told me you sound like a young Elvis naturally. So I just kind of went with that genre.
What about gospel music appealed to you?
You know what? I always liked the harmonies. I really always liked the harmonies of the music. If you ever listen to some of the groups, even today, you know, they've got younger groups now, but the harmonies always really, really got to me. And I'm, of course, the message. And you know, I love the Lord. I'm a Christian. And basically, I always liked that kind of music. It was just always steered into that from a young boy. You know, Imperials and Oak Ridge Boys and all that kind of different kind of music, you know.
Now, Elvis came into your life. Tell us how that happened.
Well, it's really unique. My mother got to meet him years ago on the set of Kissing Cousins back in 1964. She was a friend with Kitty Wells. So Elvis was always in our household. But when I heard him, actually it was gospel music that I heard him sing as a young boy. And I never heard somebody sing like that. It was just incredible. And it just really touched me. But, when I heard his music, it was just so alive and vibrant. I mean, for all the rock and roll artists in history, I never heard somebody that just had that kind of sound, that sounded, you know, just that good, you know, and that talented.
What's your favorite Elvis tune?
Oh, people ask me that all the time, and there's just too many. There's too many to list. I mean, I like all of his stuff. Some of his early stuff's great, but I like stuff like Suspicious Minds and American Trilogy and, My Way and In the Ghetto and stuff like that. I'm more into probably the later Vegas era Elvis, I guess, than the earlier stuff, but I like that too.
Are there certain songs of his that are easier to perform than others?
Oh, of course. I mean, there's, during the earlier stuff, like Don't Be Cruel and, stuff like that. I mean, that's easier than doing American Trilogy, that's for sure. Or doing, because some of his stuff was really intricate and basically, if he sang something like Hurt or he sang a really, some of those songs were really in high chords and he really had to hit the notes. So, if you're doing something like, Heartbreak Hotel or Little Sister or something, it's not as demanding. But if you're doing It's Now or Never, or something like that, it's a lot harder to do.
Elvis Presley now has been dead for over 40 years. Why does the music still survive?
You know what? He's become an icon, a culture that has been passed on to generations. I see it at the show all the time. I mean, people, the grandparents loved him, obviously, and the parents and the grandparents, had their kids listen to it, and then their kids now are having the grandkids listening to it. So it seems to be being passed on by generation to generation. And, young kids really like him, a lot of them, because, it still sounds like really good music, and sadly, today's music is, some of it is just not, it's not really as much music anymore.
You know what I have always found strange is there are a lot of tribute bands now. Beatles tribute bands,
right.
a lot of them. But the tribute bands, by and large, do not look or dress like the people they're paying tribute to.
Right.
It seems like if you are an Elvis, I guess you would call it a tribute. If you're doing a tribute to Elvis and doing his music, you have to, there is an Elvis look. There's hair, there's glasses, there's jumpsuits, there's rhinestones. Why do you think that is?
Well, are you asking why do I think people are trying to look like that, or you think both?
Yeah, why could an Elvis tribute not just be somebody in black slacks and a white shirt?
Well, you know what? There has been in the past. There's been a few people that have actually sounded like Elvis but not really tried to look much like him. I mean, Orion was one of them, and there's a couple others. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think if you're, if you're going to try to do some person, it's really good to try to at least have the hair or sideburns or the glasses and look as good as you can. Whatever clothes you may wear, try to make them look flashy or Elvis-y or what have you. Because, that's part of what you're doing. I mean, it's you're trying to create an illusion for people of kind of what, Elvis might have been or any tribute band might be.
Another interesting thing about Elvis that has always fascinated me, he was enshrined on a stamp, and there was a vote, for people who don't remember, who maybe aren't old enough, I believe this was in the 1990s, there was a vote taken because there was several different pictures that they could have put on the stamp. And everybody, by and large, and it became the stamp, chose the early Elvis, the Elvis that we all saw on Ed Sullivan and Milton Berle, which was the black jacket, and the, it wasn't the Las Vegas Elvis. It wasn't the jumpsuits. It wasn't the rhinestones. It wasn't, you know, the sunglasses. Why do you think when an Elvis tribute happens, it usually doesn't happen in the way that the United States seemed to prefer him on the stamp?
Well, you know what? I think a lot of people like the Vegas Elvis type thing. I think that's, you know, the suits were more flashy. The songs were much more intricate. To do an earlier Elvis, I mean, it's a lot easier. The clothes are very simple, and the songs were mostly three or four chords. And, you know, your vocals, you know, you have to have a higher range, but they're really simple songs. They really are. So the tribute is much more simple than doing Vegas Elvis when you have to have a huge orchestra or a band or whatever, at least, you know, decent tracks or what have you. But, you know, I think people like the flash more. But, you know, to answer why people like the earlier stuff, everybody likes to, you know, to be an icon, they like to remember people when they were young. If you look at, you know, people like James Dean or Marilyn Monroe or all these different people, they remember them being really young. When Elvis was in his heyday, that's what people wanted to remember.
Certainly is true. When it comes to Elvis to do the show that he did, how much goes into the outfits? How much goes into that look?
You know what? You can spend thousands of dollars for one costume, or you can spend just simply, you know, hundreds. It doesn't have to be. It depends on how intricate you want to go with it. You know, because Elvis wore various different things on stage. He wore, you know, jumpsuits. He wore, you know, two-piece suits. He wore, you know, just sometimes shirts and pants, or he wore, you know, a leather suit or what have you, a gold lamé coat. And the prices really vary. You know, if you want to, there's a couple companies around the country that sell, you know, professional jumpsuits, and I know they're $3,000 or $4,000 a suit. So they could get pretty expensive.
You know, your name, your moniker, Big Elvis, part of that is Elvis, and part of that is the Big, and you've told us why it is Big. You talked about having a weight problem. When did that first start?
You know, I had a problem with my weight, which wasn't terrible as a young adolescent. But by the time I was like 12 or 13, it came off, and I was a normal weight. It didn't last too long, though, until I was probably, I would say, in my early 20s. And then I got over 300 pounds, and then it just kept progressing. And by the time I was 30, I went back to being 200 pounds again, and then I gained after that. It just kept piling on. And at one time, I was weighing in at 900 pounds, believe it or not.
Mm. When you weigh 900 pounds, how do you get there?
You know, it's really funny, because if you don't study about it, you don't know. But I think what happens is your body stops functioning, and the more, you know, if you continue to eat bad food like soda pop and stuff, and that was what the case was happening to me in my 30s. I was eating, you know, bad food, and I didn't stop, and your body just basically just starts retaining all the fluid and stuff, and that's what happens. When I went on a program, I lost, you know, 400-something pounds because of just basically eating healthy. The water that came out of my system was just simply, it was frightening.
When you are 900 pounds, are you eating more than the average person?
You know, I think you are, in a sense, but probably not as much as most people would think. And I think that my choices, like most people that get that way, are eating basically what they call, just their calorie foods, but there's no nutrition. I mean, if you're eating pizzas and burgers and french fries and all that kind of stuff and soda pop and sugar and stuff. That's not healthy, and there's no structure in that. So, yeah, it's a lot of calories, but there's no nutrition in that.
When you are that size, what are the perils of life? I mean, clothes, I think, would be difficult.
Very much. Well, you have to order from, you know, certain companies. And of course, getting around for me was very, very difficult at that weight. You know, you can't walk more than probably, 30 feet without being out of air and having to sit down and what have you. And, you know, most people at that weight don't even get out of bed, and I was working. So, I mean, that was incredible. It was a very frightening experience.
What was it like to work at that weight?
Very difficult. I remember, there was a stage at the Barbary Coast where I was working at the time, and I used to basically just come out and sit there and perform. I mean, I couldn't do much of anything else to try to sing. I mean, to breathe just a lot and sing at that weight was really hard. So, your mobility is, decreased almost to nothing, and like I say, most of them don't get out of bed. So it was difficult, very difficult.
What was the turning point at 900 pounds?
Basically, I had a physician come and look at me and stuff, and he told me, he says, listen, if you don't lose weight within a matter of months, you're going to die. You got to do something about it. And I did. I got on a program and, I got a pool in the backyard set up where, I was going swimming daily for about an hour. I'd swim around. I got into a really good nutritional program, learned how to eat properly, and I lost, like I say, within a year, I think a year and a half, I lost like 500 pounds practically.
Mm. What would be a good nutritional program? What helped you lose that weight?
Carbohydrates was really bad. So I cut all the refined flours, the sugars. At that point, I wasn't as knowledgeable as I am today, but I did get off most of all the carbs. I had a little bit of fruit, very little, but I ate mostly chicken and fish. And, if it was red meat, it was in the oven, baked. A lot of vegetables. I tried to stay away from, the dressings that are, they were homemade dressings that I made, and basically no sugars whatsoever. I got off soda pop, which was a huge help. And basically, I just ate, pretty much that was a staple of what I ate, and I lost a ton of weight doing that.
Now, how long did it take to lose 500 pounds?
About a year and a half, because so much of it, like I told you, was water. There must have been 300 pounds worth of water. I mean, I probably lost that within the first year.
Now, when that weight comes off, 900 pounds, so you were down to about 400 pounds, which is still not a tiny person.
Yeah.
What was the change? How much different did you feel?
Totally different. I mean, I was able to drive again. I was able to, I'm able to walk again. I'm able to, your stamina is a lot better. And of course, you can live much more of a normal life. Though to this day, I'm not where I want to be, but I'm working on getting down. I've been on a program here for another year and a half where I've actually learned how to eat even more nutritious, and I've lost about 80 pounds. But, your whole life just comes back to you. It's actually like living again. It's before, you can't do anything.
Aside from cutting the carbohydrates, how are you losing the weight now?
I walk a lot, and basically, I eat a lot of whole grains, and I eat smaller portions, and basically I just exercise and swim. I still have my swimming pool. And, it's exercise and diet. That's the key to losing weight.
Now, at this particular time, about what weight are you at?
I'm still probably about... what had happened was I had gotten an accident probably like 3.5 years ago, a car accident, and messed up my leg. And I couldn't exercise as much as I was. And at that time, I weighed about 450. And then I gained like 100 pounds just from not exercising very much. And I got depressed, and I started eating kind of wrong. And the weight just piled right back up real quick. And the last year and a half, I said, you know what? I sort of was able to walk again better, and I started walking, and basically I said, enough of this, and I went on to a really good program, and I've lost like 130 pounds. So now I'm down to 420, and I like to get down to, my doctor said probably 280 to 300, because I'm 6'3", pretty big bone too.
Now, has this had an effect on your health overall?
You know, it's been a real blessing. I don't have diabetes, or nor do I have high blood pressure. I have an arrhythmia once in a while, especially when it's at a higher weight. I did because of the water retention stuff, but that's not as bad now that the weight's come down. So that probably didn't help things. I probably wouldn't have had that if I wouldn't have gained so much weight, but I don't get that very often.
Being known as Big Elvis, did this hurt your image in any way to lose this kind of weight?
No, I mean, it's, you know what, I mean, being healthy and still being a larger person, you can always use Big Elvis. I mean, it's always going to be there, I'm sure, but it's always, you know, always been part of who I am. I mean, everybody knows me as Big Elvis, so it's actually helped define me, and honestly, it's kind of segregated me from everybody else. It's been a blessing and a curse, to be really honest about it. I mean, there's times that, you know, somebody will write up, something about you saying, well, you know, this guy's really, you know, fat or what have you. And, it, you know, the people make fun of that. A few people do or what have you. And other people are like, no, he's really, you know, we like him. He's talented. And, you know, look beyond, you know, being heavy or what have you. So it's, you know what, it's kind of depressing in a sense because, you know, that's, I feel bad for some heavy people. You know, I'm kind of an advocate for them because some of them don't really get that way. A lot of it is because they don't understand nutrition, number one. Number two is some people, you know, their metabolism is different. Everybody has a different metabolism. I've definitely learned that over the years. And some people can eat a lot more than others and not gain weight. Other people can eat the wrong thing and be very heavy. So when people get picked on being heavy, it's you know what? That's a real form of prejudice. And today's age, I'm really shocked that that has people let that go on. You know, that people get made fun of being heavy and stuff because there's various reasons for that.
Do people say things to your face? Is it something that is constant?
Yeah, you know, people say things about, you know, a lot of them are endearing. They mean well. They're like, oh, you know, we hope you're doing okay. We're concerned about your health, and I hope, you know, your program's working and stuff like that. I don't usually get, you know, anybody that's really derogatory other than if they've, you know, if I'm seeing a picture of myself sometimes on something and underneath, you know, people have comments, and then, you know, they'll comment something that's, you know, that's not very flattering or what have you. Like, wow, that's not very good. But, you know, it is what it is. I've learned to live with it over the years, and it's, you know, if that's how, you know, people want to think, I guess that's the way they're going to think, you know. But yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of a difficult situation sometimes, but most people are, I'd have to say, you know, 9 out of 10 people are pretty good about it.
If you do end up getting down to 280 pounds, it'll be great for your health, but do you think it'll hurt being Big Elvis?
No. I still think that name's always going to be there. I mean, you know, I have a legion. You know, I would have said if 20 years ago, yeah, it probably would have been scary to do that because it'd be playing with my career, but I think, in all honesty, I have a really, really big fan base of people from all over the world. They come to see the show. We're not advertised as much as a lot of shows in Las Vegas, but I can tell you, pound for pound in that place that we play, it's busy every single day. So we have people that come, and they always tell me, we come year after year, and they bring their friends and their family and what have you. So I think we have a large enough fan base that that's, you know, if anything, they're going to be, you know, happy for me. And I also noticed that, you know, the smaller I get, the more people like the show better, and I think it'll actually help the show more.
Now, you say when you were growing up, Elvis was around the house, and then you learned that there might have been a greater relationship. Kind of take us through that.
Well, my mother like I said, met Elvis on the set of Kissing Cousins. And, you know, years ago, my aunt basically told me that, you know, my mother, when she was in Nashville, she met an entertainer. And she told me, she said, I don't think that, you know, your father is really your father. So she implicated the fact that, you know, Elvis was probably my dad, and that's what she basically implicated. So it's always been in the family. It's been, you know, always a rumor, so to speak. So, and, you know, so who's to say, you know?
What do you think?
I don't know what to think, to be honest with you. I'll be really honest. I mean, there's so much stuff that's happened over the years and been said and done and so forth that I can't really answer that. I don't know.
You know? But it was made public at some point.
There was a big thing, and there was a DNA test that my manager got years and years ago, and they said, you know, I saw the report and it said it was conclusive. I was excited. I thought, well, this is fabulous. If this be the case, take it to the courts. They went to federal court with it, and the estate said there's no way other than if you have a DNA test with you know, our DNA test to the estate with Elvis, of course, with Elvis, and he's deceased. So, you know, that's not going to happen, or his daughter. And they basically said there's no way that'll ever happen. And when that happened, it basically was like a door just slamming right in her face, and that was the end of the whole deal. So it just kind of went to the wayside.
You know, it's interesting, and this is just what my perception has been over the years, that since Elvis has died, a lot of people who do a tribute, an impersonation of him, claim to be his son.
Yeah, there's been some.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if there might. I've heard of a few that have. I've also heard of many others that aren't impersonators that claim to be their daughter or son. I've talked to them over the years, and you know, Elvis got around. I know that for a fact. I've had you know, his bodyguard was the best man at my wedding. He told me definitely that Elvis was, you know, he wasn't not sleeping around with people. So I'm sure that there is children in this country that are his. So, you know, I can't, every time I hear of a story, do I think some are for publicity? Yeah, I do. Do I think others that are sincere about it? I definitely do as well. You know, so I don't ever look at somebody that says, well, I think I could be his son or daughter, or even an impersonator, and say, well, that can't be, because it may be. You know, only they know, and only, you know, that's the way it is. I mean, they're the ones that know the truth of it.
So it might have just been all attributed to a promiscuous guy.
Well, yeah, you know, Elvis slept around as a young man, and everybody knows that. I mean, that's just how it was. I'm sure, like I say, I mean, if you're sleeping around with people, I mean, you probably have children.
It certainly is interesting, to say the least. Now, the big Elvis files. Now, tell people what this is and how it came about.
Now, the big Elvis files was a movie that my brother put together. He wrote the script for it, and basically it was supposed to be set on 1977, and basically what it is I'm a performer, and the preface of the story is I'm a performer in Las Vegas. That's Elvis had just died. I'm an imitator in 1977 in Vegas, and the mob puts out a contract to get rid of me. For some reason, I forget that plot part. But anyhow, I run off to Laconia, Washington, and my brother's, you know, local policeman up there, sheriff, with his partner, and they're basically hiding me from the mob. So it's a comedy. It's really funny. I mean, it's well put together.
Did you like the way it turned out?
I do. I think it was very slapstick, and I think there's some really good moments in it. I mean, it was an independent film, obviously, so it wasn't anything like Hollywood, but it was there was some really good moments in there I thought were funny.
Now, the documentary. Tell us about the documentary.
The documentary was much more intricate. Paul Stone, which is a producer, and they worked with Tribeca Films, and Robert De Niro and all those guys got together and said, let's do a small piece on Big Elvis, and basically, you know, about the possible being Elvis's son, and then also the performing and the weight. And the whole, I mean, it showcases a lot of different avenues of my life in there, and basically it hit the Tribeca Film Festival circuit last year. It was an official selection for them, and also, like I say, Sammy Elliott narrated it, and Robert De Niro was behind with Paul Stone. They did a really nice job. It was a really nice documentary.
A lot of people who I've known who had documentaries done about them, documentaries tend to be personal. Is there something in that documentary that you weren't completely comfortable with?
You know, I've never been really comfortable with the Elvis son thing, because I knew years ago, and I told that to my manager before that all came out when we were doing this. I said, I'm going to look like a real crackpot. I knew that already because I'd seen what had happened to other people that had did that before. And when it leaked out to the press, they got a hold of it. It was, you know, that's something I've never really, I've always wanted to keep quiet, because I never wanted that to go, you know, public where people would know that and then think, oh, this is just a publicity stunt. So I've never liked that aspect of things in my career, but I guess it just ended up being part of it. So that's the only thing I think that made me uncomfortable about the documentary.
Who's the person possibly associated with Elvis, or maybe just a well-known person in general, who you've met, who's had the biggest impact on you?
I'd have to say Sonny West. He was Elvis's bodyguard. Red and Sonny West were the bodyguards for many, many, many years. He was the best man at my wedding. He ended up being a very, very good mentor and friend of mine. He basically told me everything about Elvis. I mean, much more than most people even can imagine or read about. So, I mean, it was, he really had a big impact on my relationship with him.
What is something that the general public might not know about Elvis?
Well, you know, they probably didn't realize just how generous he was, just how much, and he didn't, you know, people always wanted to, you know, every time he did something, they wanted to make a big deal out of it, and Elvis wasn't like that. You know, he didn't, you know, nowadays a lot of people do stuff for publicity. He didn't do that. He was always trying to keep it quiet, and, you know, he would do things for people. You know, he'd pick somebody that he'd read about a sad story, and he'd go to their house, and, you know, like this older lady that didn't have a wheelchair, she didn't have money. Sonny said one morning they got up, Elvis says, we're going to go take a drive, and he bought a brand new wheelchair, it was electric, he went over and to this poor neighborhood, and the lady didn't even know who he was. She was, you know, from an older neighborhood, with, you know, she was a really old lady, didn't have but a radio in the house. She didn't recognize him. Elvis gave her a wheelchair, and he gave her, like, I don't know, $15,000 or $20,000 to the kids that were there. And you know what? And then he told all the guys standing there, he goes, I don't want this going to the paper. I don't want nobody to know about it. I just want to do this. And that's the kind of guy he was. I mean, really was generally that way. That's the guy he was. He was a very giving, caring person about people.
There's always been a lot of controversy surrounding Elvis Presley's death. What do you think happened?
You know what? I think it all started in the United States Army when he was in Germany. They gave him amphetamines to stay up all night because he wanted to get frostbite out in the when he was doing maneuvers. And I think he started taking uppers and realized, you know, the impact that they had, that he could stay up for hours and stuff. And I think when he came back to the United States and he started doing movies and stuff, he was taking the uppers because they were doing a lot of movies, like three a year, which is, I mean, just crazy. And he was filming, and he knew he had stamina to do that. And you know, from what I was told personally, was what happened was he was doing the uppers to do these movies, and then, you know, he needed something to put him to sleep because he couldn't sleep, so then he started doing downers. And I think, you know, it was all prescribed stuff, but I think over the years, Elvis just got, you know, he got hooked on those drugs, and he just took more and more and more. And I think that, you know, by the time he realized he was in big trouble in the 70s, say 74, 75, it was way too late. I mean, he was just hooked, other than just, you know, going cold turkey, which he couldn't do. Unfortunately, he tried to a couple times, but he couldn't do it. And I think it just killed him. I mean, it's sad. It's a real sad thing that happened.
What do you remember about the day he died?
I remember coming home and seeing my mother in tears. I remember her just devastated. I remember, you know, back in those days, there was only four different networks. You know, you have your ABC, CBS, NBC, and then a local network and, you know, radio stations. I just remember it was like every station was talking about Elvis's death. It was horrible. And people were, you know, I went across the street to the store to get something, you know, at the store, and people were, ladies were passed out and they were crying. It was unbelievable. It really was. It was something that was very surreal. I think it impacted, you know, everybody, everywhere. It was just unbelievable.
You know, the irony of a lot of this is Elvis died very young, unexpectedly. John Lennon, of course, murdered. That's right. Unexpected. And Michael Jackson dies fairly young, yeah, and unexpected. Yeah. Is that, unfortunately, part of that level of celebrity, in your opinion?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, look at Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, you know, Kurt Cobain. I mean, it goes on. The list is just sad. I mean, people that end up with all this money and fame, it just, I think it's too much for people to handle. I really, really, really do. And it's tragic, you know, and I think for, you know, some of them are lonely, some of them just realize, you know, this, I got all this, and I, you know, it's just not what they expected, and they just, they don't handle it well, and it's really tragic, really, really sad. A lot of good talent.
You've done the documentary, you've done the movie. What else would you like to do in your career?
Well, I got the star put on the Las Vegas Walk of Stars 2 years ago, which was really, you know, that's, you know what, there's been so many different things that have happened in my career. We're working on a, right now we just got an offer for a record company, I can't disclose who they are, in Nashville for an album or CD or whatever you call it nowadays. They want us to do that. So, I mean, you know what, I've done concerts and shows, and you know what, I've just, whatever I've done so far has been, I think, more than an average, you know, entertainer, and but smaller than, you know, somebody that's a big time entertainer. But I think I've done a lot of different things and gotten a lot of awards and stuff. So I'm really blessed. I really, really thank God for the career that I have. I do that every day.
When you look back at it now, if you had not weighed what you had weighed, do you think everything would have happened the way it happened?
You know, I can't answer that. I think that everything happened. I do believe this. I believe that everything happens for a reason. I do. I think that sometimes, you know, bad can be turned into good, if that makes any sense to you. And I think, you know what, in this life, that's how it is. You know, God, you know, puts things together for us. Sometimes he takes our weakest point and turns it into our strongest attribute. So, you know, I can't answer that. I just know that how it's went for me has been I've been blessed, because it something that should have been a most horrible thing ended up working out in my behalf in this case.
Is there ever a day when you would see you wouldn't want to go perform?
You know, let me think about that. There's there's times I'm thinking, no, you know, retirement looks good, but then at the same token, I like to see people happy. When I perform and I'm seeing people really enjoying what I do, and they come back year after year after year, and they really embrace what I'm doing, and it brings happiness, and I get to share, you know, love with them and stuff. I got to be honest with you. I think I live for that, and I think it would be very difficult to not do that anymore. I've been doing it so long, if that makes any sense.
You know, there are a lot of things in our personal life, certainly having a career that is very public, and certainly having a weight problem that is a struggle, can hurt your personal life. How's your personal life been?
Good, really good. I've got a you know, a nice lady by my side, and also you know what, I've got family, and it really, it's been great. I mean, I live out in a quiet place, kind of like out in the country, kind of, and, you know, it's peaceful, and, you know, as I told you, I'm at peace with myself and with the Lord, so, you know, things are good. My personal life's good.
When you look back at this career, what has been the high for you, the high moment?
Well, you know what, there's been several. I mean, there's been awards, you know, I'd have to say that, you know, doing all the different things, the Walk of Stars, the movies, the documentary, whatever, the Best of Vegas awards or what have you. But you know what? I think the highlights have been people coming up to me and telling me about how important the show's been to them over the years, and they've brought loved ones to come and see the show. And, you know, it's a bittersweet thing when they come and tell me, I lost my husband or my wife or my children. They're sharing their lives with you. And you know, you get to give them a hug and they tell you how important you are. Or you get, you know, some of our finest, the military. I've met so many military and police and fire and EMTs and doctors and stuff. And it means a lot that this show is like a refuge for them. They come to enjoy this show. I mean, I just had a bunch of guys from Boston and New York Police Department, you know, some of our wonderful people. They listen to my CDs in their patrol cars. I mean, you know, when you hear stories like that, and you have people coming from all over the world, from England, Scotland, Germany, Japan, yeah, I think those are highlights. I think those are the most important highlights, more than any award can even tell you.
And with all highs, there are lows. What has been the worst moment?
Worst moment. I'm trying to think about that. You know what? That's hard to just to really define, because I think the worst moments is times of, you know, isolation from what you're doing. When you hear, you know, somebody say something that's a hard remark about yourself, or, you know, there's always a concern about, you know, how long you could do this, or if, you know, if people are going to still like you. And that's always in your mind sometimes too. So, you know, that there are low moments. I mean, I won't deny that. I think, but I try to shake that off and say, look, you know what? If there's one bad opinion to every 1,000 good opinions, you know, you can't live on that. You can't dwell on what somebody says that's not positive about you, or worry about your future or what have you, because, you know, again, God will take care of that, and I trust that totally. And you know what? Everybody gets depressed, but it's just how you react to that. I try to shake it off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You know, there have been many books written about how a lot of performers, the majority, come from childhoods where maybe they weren't popular, maybe they weren't standouts, maybe they were kind of reserved children. Do you think that was the case in your case?
Oh, I definitely I stood out from the crowd. I mean, in school, I wasn't anything popular, and plus I was very shy, and you know, I sang and stuff, but, you know, I was just kind of the outsider, you know. I mean, I remember in high school I sang. That's what made me popular, but I wasn't popular in sports. I wasn't popular, you know, and I really was just there. I mean, so yeah, you're totally right. A lot of people are like that. They're, if you look at their childhood, they're nobody, and they're to themselves, and the next thing you know, they make it in the scene. I think they've got more to prove, you know, and that's what makes them really excel at that, being in the public.
Being known as Big Elvis, and when people walk in the room and see you, what would you say is the biggest misconception people have about you who don't know you?
Oh, the weight, definitely. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen people come in and laugh, or I've seen people come in and, oh my gosh, look at this guy. What's this, you know? And then they hear me sing. I will say 8 out of 10 go, wow. Wow, this is good. This is really good. And they've been really impressed, and they've stayed. And, you know, and a couple of them, they're so put off or whatever by the weight thing, they just leave or what have you. And, you know, you're going to get that. I would say out of 100 people, probably, you know, you lose probably 10 or 15 people just going, oh, I don't want to see that. But you'll get 85 that walk through there that go, wow, you know what, this is really good. And they like that, and they're like, you know what, so what? The guy's got a weight problem. So did B.B. King, and so did Fats Domino, and so did a lot of entertainers. Pavarotti, I mean, there's not, you know, not everybody's skinny. Adele's not a skinny gal. I mean, you know, there's so many different entertainers that are big that people really enjoy. I mean, not just because they don't just look at them, wow, you know, they're heavy people. They look at their talent.
Do you think that part of the reason that maybe people are put off is because later in life, Elvis did develop a weight problem, and people might see it as an embellishment?
You know, that could very well be, but I think, you know, it could be. I can't say for sure if it is or not, but it could be.
You know, Pete, before we let you go here, could you give us a little bit of your favorite Elvis tune?
Should I tell you one, or do you want me to sing one?
Just sing one. Give me a little bit.
What do you want to hear? I'll sing part one for you. You tell me.
Give me a little of Viva Las Vegas.
All right. Bright light city, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money, I'm ready to burn. Get them stakes a little bit higher. How's that?
That sounds good. Pete, this has been a lot of fun. I wish you continued success, and I hope one day that our paths cross.
I hope so. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you, Pete. Bye-bye.
Pete Valley, Big Elvis. How about that? Interesting interview. We're all done today. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Stay tuned for more programming right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Certainly nothing like it anywhere else on the dial.
You publicly said you didn't know anything about it, and it all came down that way. Do you wish you had said, yes, I know about it on December 9th earlier?
Oh, gosh, I'm not sure that you have.